Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to my beautiful planet Earth. I want to welcome you to It's All About You, the radio, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, I'm Darian Marshall. And as always, I have a wonderful show for you, a fabulous guest, and some great information to help us live better and easier lives. Today, my guest is Donald Altman. He's a returning guest, and he is the author of the book Clearing Emotional Clutter, Mindfulness Practices for Letting Go of What's Blocking Your Fulfillment and Transformation. So we're going to get right into our show and get our party started and welcome Donald to the show. Hi, Donald. How are you?
Hey. Hi, Darian. It's really great to be back with you again, and I still remember the last time we talked, and so I'm grateful that I could come back on your show.
Yeah, thank you. I was saying earlier, it's amazing how you have such a great memory. I was wondering if you even remembered being on here. I looked at my chart and said, yeah, he was on here before. That's great.
It might have been about 5 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, boy, time flies, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on your new book. It's beautiful.
Oh, well, thank you.
Clearing Emotional Clutter. I got to say that I love that little dustpan on the cover.
Right.
Whose idea was that?
You know, that was the publisher's idea, and I loved it because it's simple, and it just really is simple about the idea of how we can just dust away and clear out all those thoughts that are in the way or all that different kinds of clutter that is invisible to us and, learn how to sweep it away.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about physical clutter is you can see it and you can know when it's getting in the way, but the interesting thing about emotional clutter is that it's often invisible. And so it can help us to start recognizing it. And that's what I do in this book, to help you recognize when emotional clutter is filling up your head and keeping you from living the life that you really want to live.
And, you know, it's funny you mentioned that it could be simple, and that's the feeling I get looking at the cover of your book, that it's not really, it's work, but not a lot of really hard work to make that happen.
Right, and that's the beautiful thing, and how I try to present it is that, only a few minutes of doing this a day can really shift your consciousness and help you gain clarity and, a greater sense of fulfillment, and it's the idea that you don't have to go into a monastery to do this or, devote and, sit down and be real intense with it, because it just, much of it is about learning how to be present and how to really savor the ordinary moments that sometimes we don't see because of the clutter.
Now, most of us know about little clutter. There are a lot of shows on TV about people who hoard a lot of junk and all that. What is emotional clutter exactly?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And so I think, you could imagine holding on to all your past fears, worries, anxieties, so your mind's so cluttered you can't be here. So it could be worries from your past. It could be childhood clutter. We all have some of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or family clutter. It could be anxiety about the future. And I've worked with a lot of people who are so worried about the future, about their, saving for the future, their retirement, or their, after a divorce, how are they going to move forward? And so all the worries about the future. And then there's also the clutter of the daily moment, of the daily wear and tear, the feelings of overwhelm by all the things we have to try to do right today. And so there's clutter from the past, the future, and even the present moment that can get in our way. And then we're like stuck in a rut. It's like our wheels are spinning, but we're not able to move anywhere. And so if you have that feeling like you just are stuck or you just can't get some traction and start moving, then that's a good warning signal that you probably have clutter.
Now, is it normal to remember negative things and worrisome things maybe from the past so that we don't make those same mistakes over again in the future?
Yeah, and I think it's that's a good point, because nobody needs to feel bad just because you're experiencing, worry about things from the past, and that is normal. The brain is actually, has a survival center built into it, and in Clearing Emotional Clutter, I bring in some interesting research and some interesting brain research. And so, the brain is wired for survival. So it's always looking for something that could be threatening, you know, even something that is a perceived threat, something that really isn't going to harm us, but it's like a smoke detector. And there's a part of the brain that serves that role. And if your smoke detector is too sensitized, you might be sensing smoke when there really isn't any, right?
Mm.
And so, it's okay to know that our brain is trying to protect us, but we also have to know how to calibrate that, how to maybe turn down the sensitization of if our smoke detector is going off and there's really no fire. So we need to know how to do that. And that's one of the things I help people do in the book is to regulate and quiet down that smoke detector in the brain. And there are some wonderful ways to do that, actually.
You talk a lot about getting off the emotional elevator. Exactly. What do you mean by that?
Well, the emotional elevator is really interesting. You could think about all the things that make your moods either go up or down.
Mm-hmm.
And you could think of that as, you know, riding an emotional elevator. So things go your way, you get that great promotion, you get the new house you always wanted, you have a happy thought about yourself, or maybe somebody compliments you and then the elevator goes up. But what if things don't go your way? Maybe, you know, you have a health problem, your partner leaves you, you know, you have a thought that says, you know, I'm not really as good as those other people at work. Or maybe your friend ignores your text and then the elevator goes down. So that can be very exhausting, going up and down, having people, you know, push our buttons all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And even our own inner thoughts pushing our buttons. So if we can get off that elevator and start really kind of controlling our own buttons, think about how nice that might feel,
mm-hmm.
right? And how much more in control you'd feel of your life. So that's the idea of, you know, getting off that elevator.
It's amazing. Yeah, and I'm just thinking as you're talking about that, how easy that can really happen. You mentioned text. I text people and
mm-hmm.
didn't hear back from them right away. And right away my mind starts going like, well, what happened? Did I say something wrong?
Yeah.
Or?
I call it the textpectation.
That's cool.
So, you know, you text somebody and they don't text you back and you have this kind of anxiety, this textpectation.
Yeah.
You know, you're worried. And, yeah, I think we really feel that. And so that's a good example, too, of that elevator, you know, going down in that moment.
That's nice. Textpectation. Well, you say that and you also have another phrase you use, inner Facebooking. I like that.
Right. Yeah. And I have a whole chapter on inner Facebooking. And to me, it's a skill that anyone can learn. If you could enter Facebook, that actually helps support you. So let me explain the concept
mm-hmm.
as quickly. Facebook. When you're on Facebook, you're looking at things that are happening in other people's lives. You can put up your own posts about your own life. But there's a whole second Facebook, what I think of as an inner Facebook, and those are the inner posts that we're putting up in our own mind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes those posts are not the best. They might be unflattering. And if we're putting up a lot of unhappy Facebook posts in our own mind, then we're going to end up being unhappy. We're going to end up being dissatisfied. Or we're going to end up being unfulfilled. And so I think we can start to pay attention to our own Facebook posts. And if we can do that, we can start to notice, I put up that post about, you know, I'm not really good enough, my friends don't like me, or whatever that post is. And so then you can put up supportive posts. So you can learn how to put up posts that talk about your strengths, that are more really truthful, actually. You know, one of the points I like to make is that we have, thousands of thoughts in the course of a day. And actually, Darian, we have... somewhere between about 75,000 thoughts in the course of a day is what some scientists have said.
Mm.
So, how many of those thoughts really tell you something very profound about yourself? Or how many are accurate even?
Yeah.
So I want your listeners to think about that for a moment. And so it's important for us to put up some posts that are supportive and encouraging and also are really more accurate or based on some evidence in our lives. And if we can do that, we don't let those negative Facebook posts push our elevator and, you know, push the button that has us go down all the time.
And it's amazing you say that, because I see that a lot on Facebook, too. There was one friend of mine, I just stopped reading his. I mean, they were so depressing.
Oh, yeah.
He lost his job, and the house burned down. I mean, it was just like one bad story after the next.
Mm.
And even some of the Facebook people were kind of sick of it, and they even asked him, like, do you ever have a good day? You know, and people started chiming in, and he changed his stuff around, and
wow.
Now he's a lot more happier.
So that changed how he was posting, huh?
Mm-hmm. It really did.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's great. He was able to let that in. And so that's what I'm suggesting, too, is we kind of let in the light and we let in the positive things. We notice those, too. Yeah, I mean, sure, there are negative things that are going to happen in life. We don't always have control over those, but we do have control over how we want to respond and how we want to use our attention to even notice the ordinary, the good, the decent, the beautiful things that are around us every day, right? And if we give those things some of our awareness, we pay attention to those, wow, that can make us feel good, you know. Even the little things, and one of the things I like to talk about in the book is, you know, savoring the ordinary things and appreciating the ordinary, or having faithfulness to this moment, right? Even faithfulness to this breath. See how nice that is. Take this in-breath. Let it fill up your lungs. Let it take a nice deep breath. And exhale slowly. And it's so regulating, and it's been shown to really cool down the brain, you know, cool us down when we're getting maybe hot-tempered or hot-headed, and it relaxes the body, it relaxes our muscles, and so it's wonderful how just being aware of this breath, and you might do that for just a few breaths out of the day, or you might do it at a time when and that's really a way of clearing emotional clutter in the moment, of just coming back to this moment. You know, when you take that nice breath, is that, I like to ask the question, you know, was that yesterday? Was that tomorrow? It's very much the present moment.
Yes. Yeah, that reminds me of, I wanted to ask you the question about you being a Buddhist monk. Were you once a Buddhist monk? And how does a person be a Buddhist monk and then become, what do I call you? I want to call you an inspirational teacher. I don't know what to call you.
Yeah, I mean,
titles.
I like to think maybe that I am an inspirational teacher, and I'm somebody who teaches about how to get into this now moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really my passion is helping people get more present and enjoy this present moment. I don't think we're here to dwell on the past and to suffer needlessly. We can learn from the past, of course, and learn from negative, bad things that happened to us, but we don't need to hold on to them forever. We can learn from them and move forward in a new way. And so, yeah, going into the monastery was a great experience for me, Darian. It really changed my life, and I moved into a whole new direction in terms of the kind of work that I did. I went back to school and became a psychotherapist and working with people in therapeutic ways, and then it changed the kind of work I was doing as far as the kind of writing I did. So I'm so grateful that, and I went into the monastery, not because things were going so great for me. I went in because I was experiencing a lot of difficulties in my life, and I didn't have the tools to handle them and to deal with them. And so going in was a wonderful training for me in how to clear emotional clutter and start to understand the mind more deeply and understand our thoughts and how to make friends with our mind. Isn't that great if you can make friends with your mind and appreciate it and then learn how to make friends with others? If we can be friends with ourselves, then we can be friends with others more easily.
Nice. Very nice. Now, I wanted to know if you could expand a little bit on something that you say here. Now, you say that transitioning from one place to another can produce emotional clutter. Exactly what do you mean by that?
You know, this is really fascinating. This is something I really don't hear anybody else really talking about, but it's so true that when we transition, you could think of transition There are different kinds of transitions, but let's just talk for a moment about physical transitions.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm physically transitioning, let's say from my work to my back to home, or let's say in the morning when I'm going from home, you know, leaving the home, going somewhere to school, or I'm going to the office or something. When we're transitioning, what's fascinating is we don't know what's going to happen next. There's a lot of uncertainty. What's that freeway going to be like? What's the traffic going to be like? Who am I going to meet? What's going to happen next? And that increases our feelings of anxiety. Okay, so transition tends to, even daily transitions tend to increase our anxiety because we don't know what's going to happen next. And so if we can help ourselves recognize transitions and maybe even simplify the number of transitions we have to make in the course of a day, that can help us. So let's say you had 5 errands to run. You're feeling overwhelmed, right? You got all these errands. So maybe what you do is instead of doing all 5, maybe you do the 2 that are close to one another in proximity, do those on one day, and so the next day do the other 3 that are more closer in proximity to each other. Or let's say if you're working on some projects, staying with one project a little longer instead of multitasking, shifting, transitioning from one project to the next, which actually has been shown to slow you down. It doesn't make us faster because every time we go to the new project again and we shift, we have to reorient before we can start digging into it again, right, and start working on it. So I talk about how either to simplify transitions, another important thing about transitions is how we enter or leave people that we're with. So when you're leaving, say you're leaving your family, that's about closure and connection. I mean, how can you say to somebody who you're with, give them some reassurance, you know, have a nice day, give them a hug, say, well, you know, I'll text you or I'll talk to you later. So that's closure and connection. And then when you're entering a new space, that's all about safety and inclusion. So when you enter somewhere, making eye contact, saying, hey, good morning, or how are you doing, and just feeling included. That's why when people come home from work and they come back into the house, and if their partners or their family doesn't connect with them, and is like, say, they're on the computer, you're watching TV, and you don't really stop and make eye-to-eye contact or give that person a hug or welcome them in, invite them in a very inviting way and include them, they're not going to feel really safe, and you're not going to have the kind of relationship building that you would like. So really it is very important about how we transition, and it can have a lot to do with building, strengthening our relationships and giving us greater sense of calm, ease, safety, and sense of peace.
You know, that's I love doing these shows so much because you are so talking to me right now. Just the other day, people think I really have it together. If they were only in here and see some of the, because
well,
I've done
probably
that.
Do.
I tried once the other day. I was vacuuming the floor, dusting furniture, and trying to do the dishes at the same time. So I would run in the kitchen, wash a plate, then run back into the living room, dust a table, then run back and get a cup. And I thought I was getting everything done. I was so exhausted by the time all that was done.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I still didn't wash the dishes properly. There were little cruddy little pieces on the sides. But I thought if I did that, I can get everything done. But it slowed me down even more.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
So you're really talking to me.
And so, you know, when you're doing something like that, you really are kind of resisting doing it.
Yeah.
I just want to get this out of the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just allowing yourself just to be present with it, not fight it. And really, you know, it can change your experience of it a lot. But I could see how that could leave you feeling exhausted.
Yeah.
Are you going to try it a different way next time?
After having this show, I think I'll just, if I'm going to do the dishes, stick to that, just do the dishes.
Yeah.
I'll be more at peace, I tell you that much. Wow. You talk about the strengths, and there are many strengths.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I know you just touched on this a little earlier.
You know, this is...
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Thank you for bringing that up, Darian, because I think that, you know, often we're in a very critical culture,
mm-hmm.
and we're always looking for things that are maybe not quite right, and even in our own heads, we could have a critical committee of voices telling us that, you know, you're not doing things right, or you're, you know, blaming you for things that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as a result of that, we stop to look at our own strengths. We've stopped recognizing the qualities we have that make us who we are, that make us effective in the world. And the thing is, you need strengths to be effective in the world. And so I like people to think about how even the daily little strengths, the things you do that you sometimes take for granted, you know, are important. So, for example, suppose that, you know, you get up in the morning and you climb in the car and go to work. Well, you know, you might forget that you had a lot of strengths there that required a lot of skills. So, for example, you know, if you took a shower in the morning, that's a strength of self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So is getting enough sleep. If you, you know, picked out your clothes in the morning, that's a strength of organization, right, and discipline. You know, if you get to work on time, that's a strength of timeliness and responsibility. You know, if you walk your dog, that's a strength of compassion and caring for another, you know, or strength of kindness, you could call it. You know,
yeah.
If you laugh at something that goes wrong and you kind of have a sense of humor, that's a strength of humor, right? But all of these are really coping skills, is helping us get through the day and be effective. And so, you know, I like to say that even if you parked your car in the mall and you come out, and there, you know what it's like in that giant, those giant parking lot, it's a big sea of cars out there, but if you can find your car, that's the strength of memory.
Yeah.
So I think that we need to give ourselves credit for the little things we do, and I see people just kind of saying, no, that's just my routine, and they kind of discount or devalue their strengths. And I think it's important for us not to devalue that, but to value our strengths and to give ourselves credit for all the things that we do. And, you know, there have been over 108 different strengths identified by psychologists. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. And
that really is.
Yeah, and so when you hear somebody, also, how about telling a stranger what you notice, one of their strengths? I mean, I try to do that myself. Maybe I don't always remember, but when I can, if I notice something, you know, I try to let somebody know what, you know, what I think their strengths are. And people feel so happy when you share a strength with them, when you tell them about one of their strengths, and they kind of light up. It's really neat. And so I think that's a great practice, or even just noticing one of your strengths, identifying one of your strengths,
mm-hmm.
and then one time a day for a week, apply that strength. So, you know, put it into practice, and then make a note of it every night, what you did. So let's say your strength was hospitality.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, you're hospitable, I can tell that, because you greeted me on the phone beforehand, and you talked, and you were just very hospitable. So that's one of your strengths that I recognize right away.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, so every day, let's say one day at work, you say, oh, can I get you a cup of coffee? Or you ask somebody else if you could do something hospitable for them, get them a cup of water or a cup of coffee. Maybe you hold the door open for somebody. Maybe you smile at somebody. And every day, write down that one hospitable strength, and at the end of a week, just look at how it made you feel.
Oh, wow.
Right? And how it made other people feel. And then the next week, maybe choose a different strength. And it's pretty amazing how that could shift your day.
Oh, could you imagine doing something like that every day, week after week? Oh, man. I mean, really, just from giving me that one strength that you notice about me, I've feel 10 feet tall already just hearing that.
Oh, well, that's,
you know,
that's
what I mean?
Great.
That's fantastic.
And I think it's beautiful, really, because it's like we're, you know, why be stingy with our emotions and, you know, what we just little things we have to offer someone.
Mm-hmm. You talk about friendships and how developing friendships can help clear away emotional clutter, too. How does that work?
Well, you know, let me tell you about some research that I've seen a lot of research about how important social relationships are and friendships are.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big study that came out that said that if you don't have a supportive friend network or social network, that's as bad for your health as being obese, smoking 15 cigarettes a day, and even being an alcoholic. Can you believe
no
that?
No kidding.
It's amazing. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, so we really, friends just really bolster our immune system. We feel supported. And I take, and I, pardon?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's clearing my throat. Sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. But so, I mean, and I talk about different ways to work with friendship and talk about the seeds of acceptance, trust, and empathy as ways to, you know, build friendship.
Mm-hmm.
And it can just be wonderful to build cultivate friendships and to think about how you could do that. And so I think those three seeds are important because, the seed of acceptance is really about accepting that your friend for who they are, knowing that they're not always going to be perfect, and none of us are. So we need to be forgiving of our friends. We need trust, and trust is really like kind of the glue that really brings our friendships closer together. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you really got a tight friend or somebody like that, you know they have your back, and you know you can tell them anything, and you know that, but it takes time to develop trust. You know, we have to have patience for that, and that trust builds slowly over time. But once you have it, it's very powerful. And then now let's talk about empathy, which is really being able to put yourself in your friend's shoes and understand what they're feeling. And, you know, when somebody, when you're able to do that, that really increases that sense of closeness and understanding that you have for one another. So I think of those as kind of the three seeds of friendship.
Boy, this is a good book. The more we talk about it, better.
There's a lot in the book. Yeah, there's a lot. And I have lifestyle tools, some really nice little practices throughout that are very easy to use that you can put a lot of this right into practice immediately.
Oh, yeah. And can you give me your website? I meant to mention it earlier when we started.
Oh, yeah. It's mindfulpractices.com. And that's MINDFUL, mindfulpractices.com. And if you go onto the homepage, Darren, you'll find a Mindful Living newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
So sign up for the newsletter. And then every month I have some new mindful reflections, some new research, and then you can also find out about some of the upcoming events that I have going on. So I invite everybody to sign up for that.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Let's see, 2017. I got 3 minutes. I squeeze this in here. Can you mention, you mentioned about the importance of friendships to get a to help clear out the emotional clutter. Now, you talked also about listening, and then you have an acronym here. Can you tell me about that really quick? I got 2 minutes.
Sure. Okay, I'll tell you really fast. But this is a great way to get out of your, maybe to get out of your own way if you're in an argument or you really want to open up and empty, you know, your own opinions. So the H stands for just hold your assumptions. Empty your ego for a moment. Get curious about the other person. Okay. The E means empathy, as I talked about that for friendships. And that empathy means enter the emotional world of the other person, and that engages, not enrages, the other person. When you have empathy, you really can connect. The A stands for absorb and accept. So accept means not trying to fix this person or change them, but that you can accept this is where they're at right now. Okay. And absorbing, just allowing yourself to understand with openness whatever it is this person is saying. And then the reflect means, so the first three of those are listening within a more open way, and the R in here stands for reflect, then respect. So allow yourself to, really, if you need to go back and listen and think about what this person said, do so. But then when you're ready to respond, do it in a kind-hearted way. You know, if you have any anger, just wait. Right, and then when you're ready, respond respectfully.
Wonderful. Boy, you really got your stuff together. I'm telling you, this is great. Well, thanks so much for joining me today. I'd say that party went by so quickly.
Yeah,
so fast.
It did.
Well, you've been listening to It's All About You, the radio program that is celebrating life, prosperity, and unlimited potential. And I'm your host, Darian Marshall. And my guest today was Donald Altman, author of the book Clearing Emotional Clutter, mindfulness practices for letting go of what's blocking your fulfillment and transformation. And you can learn more by going to www.mindfulpractices.com. I look forward to being with you next week. So have a great week, and so it is.